Hey, thanks for downloading the podcast. And remember, if you want to listen live, download the iHeartRadio app, download the TuneIn app, and just search for Fantasy Sports Radio Network, and you can listen to this program live. Also, if you want to watch the video of this podcast, check us out on YouTube, on Twitch, or on Periscope, and type in, you guessed it, Fantasy Sports Network. You'll find us there. Enjoy the show, and thanks for listening.
You're listening to the Fantasy Sports Radio Network.
Fantasy Sports Today.
And away we go. Dan Straver, Mike Blewett with you here on Fantasy Sports Today, right here on the Fantasy Sports Radio Network. A jam-packed three-hour show coming your way from 8 to 11 on the East Coast. Thanks so much for joining us here on FNTSY. Find us on Twitter at FNTSY Radio. Of course, it's at Mike Blewett, at Dan Straver. If you want to talk to us, feel free to tweet at us. We'll answer any questions here on the air. Mr. Blewett, we have a lot to get to, but I'd like to know how you're doing. What's going on in your world, Mike?
I am, reveling in what is one of my favorite weekends of the year. I always take a lot of time to watch as many games as possible over these first 4 days, and I'm right on pace. You know, today we actually have St. Patrick's Day in my town, so we have a little parade here, and you know, everybody gets into it. So we'll be taking the kids over there for that afterwards. And then I'll go straight back to watching games.
There you have it. St. Patrick's Day was big around this part. The two older girls do the Irish step dancing. So we in and out of pubs with them, yeah. which is always intriguing, but lots of fun last weekend. Don't have any spillover this weekend, but plenty of birthday parties. It seems like March and April are ripe with birthday parties for the kindergarten through five age bracket. So
yeah, so we were both off last week. I was in Charleston, South Carolina, had a weekend off with the buddies, and you were doing a draft, correct?
Correct. I was in New York Friday night for one of the Tout Wars draft.
How was that?
It went well. A mixed head-to-head auction. The points they have, so it's head-to-head points, and the way they have scoring makes Max Scherzer about as valuable as Josh Bell, which makes for very interesting drafting in a room where people aren't necessarily sure how they should be spending their money. But it was fun. It's always great to catch up with all of the baseball world. Frank was there. Frank Stanfall, got to meet him in person for the first time.
Good guy. Which was nice. I was hanging out with Frank yesterday, actually, watching games.
Yeah, good guy. Got to talk to him up and down the sports spectrum, and just all the guys from this network and from other networks and from all the sites out there. So it was a ton of fun.
Mixed auction,
head-to-head points.
Head points, got it. And Frank was in that league. Who else was in that league?
Frank was not. Frank was out at Foley's after the fact, so I got to catch up with him. You had Prospect Jesus, which is Ralph Lifshitz. You had Andrea Lamont, who you may know as Roto Lady. You had Joe Pizzapia, Jake Seeley, Paul Sporer.
Paul Sporer is a really nice guy.
Ian Kahn is
a really nice guy and competitive.
Spore is awesome. And Spore's about 5 inches taller than I thought he was, which was random.
Long, tall, drink of water. He's on Twitter like at Sporer, I think, S-P-O-R-E-R. So he's really knowledgeable baseball guy. I interviewed him last year during that same weekend. It just so happened that I was out. We probably would have done that again this year, but such is life. I was on vacation and you were doing the draft. So, all right, well, we'll get into March Madness and stuff, but I want to hear about this team first. Well, who did you end up? I'm doing a draft tomorrow, by the way, and I'm in the league that's like a house league. I'm doing it with the producers of all the various shows. So Frank is going to be one of the guys in the league. Steve, Alex, all those, the whole crew of people is doing it, I believe. So who's the highlight of your team? Who was your first round draft? Or who's your?
Well,
it's an auction, so it's not a draft like that. But who'd you spend the most money on?
Well, it was I went heavy on shortstops. I ended up with Seager and Story. I went with Machado. So there was value in the middle infielders. Yeah, a lot of home runs, not a ton of stolen bases. I'm going to be a little bit weak there. If it's a weird league because it is head-to-head points, but you also track the categories and get points for that. So it's sort of scoring all over the place and going to be a learning experience as I go. On the pitching side, I spent $15 on a bunch of pitchers. So I got Strasburg for $15. I got Paxton for $15. I got Sonny Gray for $7, which I'm a big fan of Sonny Gray this year out of New York.
I saw you tweeted that. You noticed that you just have a lot of Sonny Gray across your leagues this year.
More than I would prefer is the way I would say it. But I just think it's a bounce back spot, and he's going for pennies on the dollar when it comes to ADP or auction value. So if he returns to any sort of his Oakland form, I think I'm profiting handsomely off that buy. And then you had to have two relief pitchers. That was a bit of a mess for me. I didn't lean in on closers until late. So I have like Will Smith on the roster. Sonny Gray does qualify as a relief pitcher because of his appearances for the Yankees last year, which will help me out immensely, being able to slot him into that roster spot and pick up the extra points from the starter instead. But it's going to be a fun one to track. It's going to be one that there are going to be deals. There are going to be lots of deals, I think, lots of trades. Some people really bulked up on just closers, trying to game the system and the scoring system. Some try to pay heavy on pitchers, just like you would in a typical draft.
Have minimums of innings pitched. No minimums of innings pitched?
No, being it's not a roto, it's sort of straight, yeah.
So you can't just go closers and try to keep your ratios down and
exactly
everything else.
So it's going to be a fun one. And I'm trying to think of who Ryan Bloomfield from Baseball HQ was in the room. I have said Ian Kahn, who plays Washington on the show Turn, was in the room. He's a big prospect and fantasy baseball guy. I think that's Link from RotoWire. Clay Link from RotoWire was there. So that's pretty much the majority of the room. I'm sure I'm forgetting one or two people. Yep.
Nice.
12 team head to head.
That's good. All right, man. Well, good luck.
Well, we'll keep in touch on that. I'll keep everybody up to date as we roll through and tell you how badly it's going sometime in June. And then
and I'll tell you how badly I'm getting my tail kicked in by the producers of our shows at some point. Baseball is a grind, man. It's a grind. I did two leagues last year. One was just a random league, and I won that one. And then the other one was I did with George Kurtz. But the funny thing is, it was one of George's home leagues that he's associated with. There was really no money on the line, I don't think. But it was just for fun.
Or he didn't tell you there was any money on the line.
That's a good point. Well, I didn't give him any money, so I don't feel bad about it. But the funny part is it was – and I don't – you know, I play in a lot of like daily leagues where you can make daily changes to the lineups.
Right.
And this one was just, you got to put in your lineups on Sundays. You know, you do your, you make your changes Sunday night on Sunday, it locks at Monday at whatever, you know, first pitch on Monday. And you made your changes for the week. And I kept going in there for like the first 2 months of the season to make changes. And every time George had already done it because George is on it. You know, George is writing about baseball and he's doing, excuse me, the Sunday show. So he was always on it. And every time I went to make a change, it was like, oh, George already made the change I was going to make. So like halfway through the season, I was like, well, every time I go on here, George has already done it. And George knows more about fantasy baseball than I do. So I'm not going to argue with it. If it ain't broke, don't fix it. We weren't doing that well, but I could tell by the transactions he was making, like we were sort of built for the long haul.
Yep.
And sure enough, after the All-Star break, things started to turn around a little bit. And we were hovering really around fourth or fifth most of the season. I don't want to say we finished the regular season in fourth, but one in the playoffs and one the title. So I was in two leagues, won them both last year. I have a feeling your league's going to be slightly more competitive than the one.
Well, I mean, you get into these home leagues, and I'm a big proponent of know your rules, know your league, right? And that's how I talk about fantasy baseball. We have some time later on to maybe dive into a little bit more strategy. But you get into these home leagues that are probably even more competitive, and someone like George, someone like yourself, someone like me, or Joe Pizzapia, who I'm in a bunch of leagues with, we have a little bit of marks on our back. You know, we talk about this stuff on a daily basis. There's a bit of pride on the line where we get paid to do it. Our friends and our family, and even, you know, friends of friends who are in leagues with us, they come after us a little bit more. And that's not a bad thing. I'm not trying to make it sound, know, like I'm a victim in any way. But
no,
I think they become more competitive that way.
Yeah.
And I think that's a fun aspect of it all as you play fantasy baseball. And Mike said it's a grind. You're in it for 6 months. You're in it for 6 months. And if you're doing daily transactions and daily lineup setting, I'm not as big a proponent of daily transactions. Daily lineups, fine. Daily transactions is a bit much. But you're going to be in the slog. And if you play DFS as well, then you're really in it. And you really are diving in each and every day to mini leagues and mini seasons and trying to figure it all out on a day by day basis, which I do. I'm a big fan of MLB DFS and looking forward to that kicking off in the not too distant future. But
cool.
We do have Mike, the NCAA tournament, as you said, is in full gear. We had the first 2 days. We move on to round two on Saturday and Sunday. Figure we could go region by region, do a little recap, talk about the games, talk about what games are coming up. But overall, and not looking for you or I to be a bracketologist or anything, but did anything stand out to you with the field of 68, with the 64 teams that made it to the tournament proper that stood out as a glaring problem for you or something that in hindsight you wish the selection committee had reconsidered?
I don't think so. You know, over time, and look, I've been a college basketball fan from a really early age. So, and college basketball has changed a lot. Now, you have to consider, when I first got cable television, I was 12 years old, 13 maybe, and I was dying for cable television because of ESPN.
Right.
It was the only reason I wanted cable. And I didn't think we had, like, HBO or anything like that to start out. We just had the basic package. And I was dying for ESPN because I knew, basically, like, my town rolled out cable television, like half the town got it. So like for my friends in my grade school had cable for like almost a year before I got it, and I was dying because ESPN, like anybody that knows the history of ESPN realizes that ESPN was built on the back of college basketball.
Yep.
Period. There was a lot of weird kind of stuff that you could watch back in the day, and I could tell you, I know how to, like, if I watch an Australian rules football game,
Yep.
I can tell you the rules because
the scoring
is
fantastic.
I watch. Yeah. The scoring, I know a lot of the rules. I've probably forgotten some, but I know a lot of the rules, and I could probably watch it on any one of my 500 cable channels. Now I don't really watch it anymore, but if it's on in a pub somewhere in Manhattan and I'm out one night, I could tell you the gist of it, and I can certainly tell you the scoring. They used to have Timber Sports. I don't know if you remember that back in the day. They have these like outdoorsman competitions, but realistically, much of the content was college basketball, notably the Big East, which was the conference, since I grew up in New York City, it is the conference that I watch primarily. So I set all that up to say I've been watching a lot of college basketball from an early age. And I loved it, and I still love it. So, but while the sport has changed a lot insofar as instituting one and done scenario, that phenomenon, that will probably go away soon. But, you know, in that way, it makes you wistful for old school college basketball in that way, because teams, the big name teams and teams that were good, were these veteran teams. You got to know who Chris Mullin was and Patrick Ewing was.
Right.
And, you know, there's very few. Rare was a guy like Michael Jordan, who left a year early, or Isaiah Thomas, who left early. They would get hardships and leave, hardship consideration and leave. But in that sense, that's different. But what I don't do anymore is I don't really bitch about the bracket too much. Do you know what I mean? Like, if you're a bubble team and you're out, you probably didn't play your way in. Sorry, NC State. Don't have a terrible out-of-conference schedule. It's the worst in the nation. Don't do that. Or, you know, sorry to the other teams that missed out, but, you know, don't lose 14 or 15 basketball games during a season, and you won't be in that position. As far as certain brackets looking tougher than others, like, yeah, Gonzaga's road looks a little tougher, but you know what? These teams get knocked off, and then before you know it, you're playing a 12 seed, and, like, if you're Gonzaga and you have to end up playing Murray State, for example, yeah, they have a great player, but you got to beat them. Like, if you're a top four seed, there's no complaining. You got to run. You're going to run into good teams eventually anyway. It's a really difficult to win this tournament, so I can't really get. I usually don't get into how teams got screwed or how teams get hooked up, or I do it less than I used to. Like, when you look back at Syracuse's title with Carmelo Anthony, Syracuse got a gift that year. They played two games in Boston. They played two games in Albany, and it was like home games. They had four home games before they got to the Final Four, and they ended up winning. So we'll get into the nitty-gritty of this tournament. Sorry for the diatribe, but I wanted to give people a sense of how much I love this.
Absolutely, and we're going to get more of that passion on the other side of this break as we go region by region, break down the games thus far and what matchups are coming up, and some of the top stories from each region as well. Will we talk Tom Izzo? Potentially. That's on the other side of this break. Dan Stratford, Mike Blewett right here on the Fantasy Sports Today, Fantasy Sports Radio Network. Back with more after this.
From the NFL to the NBA, DailyRoto.com is the place to win millions in daily fantasy. You can get the best DFS NFL coverage all season long for a price of $129.99 or dominate the entire daily fantasy sports realm with the Elite Package at $59.99 per month. If you use the promo code FNTSY, you get 10% off your DailyRoto package. Go to DailyRoto.com, pick your NFL or Elite Package, enter promo code FNTSY, and you'll be on your way to becoming the next Daily Roto millionaire.
Rocking here on Fantasy Sports Today. Dan Stratford, Mike Blewett with you this Saturday morning. Thanks so much for joining us here on the Fantasy Sports Radio Network. We're talking NCAA tournament to start here. Obviously, the all-encompassing March Madness is upon us, and lots of storylines to get to across each region. Want to talk about the East first, where Duke is just a machine. And yes, they... My first half seemed like they were disinterested, seemed like they were, you know, playing to the level of their opponent, and NDSU seemed up to the task for a little while, and I'm sure there were some Duke fans out there who were saying, nope, can't do this, can't have this happen to us, that's not how this is supposed to go, we're supposed to get to the Final Four with Zion, it's going to happen. And then in the second half, Zion Williamson is just... He's elite, and I don't know what his NBA, you know, career is going to be. I do wonder if he is going to be the savior these teams think he's going to be. But as far as college players go, and a player at his age, he's a wonder to watch. And they ran away in the second half and really put their stamp on that game.
He's so clearly the best player in college hoops that it's hilarious. I think Ja Morant is great, and RJ Barrett has some really interesting projections as a pro, but Zion is so clearly the best player.
Yep.
And he proved it last night. Just the athleticism that he has is as somebody that's 6'7", 285, who frankly isn't even in his best shape yet, right? Like, he still looks like a kid who has baby fat on him.
Yep.
It's just really pretty incredible to watch. The tip steal that he chased down, dribbled the ball behind his back, lost his balance, and laid it in with his left hand is amazing. Just an amazing play. For those of you that haven't seen the highlight, just look it up. Just go watch the highlights on whatever site has them, and you'll see what we're talking about. So he shot 12 of 16 last night, and as I said to you before the show, I think if Zion shoots 75% for the rest of the tournament, they're going to be all right. They did shoot 42% from three last night, which is a good sign for them. Now, granted, they're playing a far inferior opponent. They scored 54 points in the second half, to give everybody a sense. I wonder, I didn't read or I didn't see if Coach K said he ripped them at halftime, but I would imagine a 4-point lead at halftime was not good enough for him. I wonder if he just ripped them and or if he just said, look, it's time to turn it up a notch, and they did. You know, they beat him 54-35 in the second half. I don't believe they covered, though. They only won
they didn't.
By yeah, they
only
they
did
won
not
by
23,
yeah. 23. So I did not have a good day with my wagers yesterday. First day I went 4-2. Yesterday sort of gave it all back. I think I went 2-4. I had the Buffalo Arizona State over, but whatever. We can get into that game a little bit later. As far as Duke is concerned, I've done multiple brackets and I do have them winning one of them. I think shooting, they're not a great outside shooting team, and I think that could hurt them. If they run into Michigan State and Michigan State has a good game. But I really do I've thought from the beginning of the year, if Duke plays their best games, I don't think they can be beat this year. That's just how I feel.
It is strange to talk about a Duke team not being very good from outside. You have this run of all of these gritty outside shooters, take that word for what it's worth, but guys who just could light it up from deep if they needed them to. And there's not necessarily that go-to guy on this team. It's full of a lot of great basketball players, but not necessarily somebody who's dead red from outside. And to see them shoot 42%, and you're right, the opponent not the greatest, but if that is a legitimate upside for them from three, and Zion shooting even 60% or above, it's going to be really tough to see them losing to anyone. They have UCF next. UCF coming up big over VCU. I still think Duke rolls here, but there's some athleticism on this Golden Knights team that could be at least make this a fun game tomorrow. I don't see a line as of yet, but I'll double check that as we go through. Liberty, one of the three.
Keep in mind, North Dakota State, for the record, North Dakota State was a losing basketball team when they entered their conference tournament. So good for them that they got to the tournament, but they're the worst team. They're the worst team in the tournament, according to the seedings, or amongst the worst teams, according to the seedings. I guess Fairleigh Dickinson would be one of those teams as well. But nonetheless, good game, good start for Duke, and on to the next game. So you said Liberty with the big upset.
Yeah, there are 3-12 winners. So you had three of the 12 seeds in the 12-5 matchup get the win. Liberty was one of them, 80-76 over Mississippi State. They now get Va Tech in round two. Va Tech over St. Louis, 66-52. I'll be honest, Virginia Tech's one of those teams I don't know a ton about in this tournament. I've watched them play once or twice this year, but not really a team that I read a lot about, not a team I tracked a ton. Liberty's a team that could do some damage here. Do you think this is a good matchup, or do you think the ACC team rolls to face probably Duke in the next round?
So I think the interesting dynamic is that the Virginia Tech coach is already rumored to be leaving, taking the vacant Texas A&M job. So I wonder if that becomes a huge distraction for the players because they know that their coach is out. Like, their coach is done. Like, I read that story 3 days ago that he's leaving. And that could be a distraction. Now, they took care of business against St. Louis, but is this upstart Liberty team give them a run? I mean, you know, Liberty put some points on the board yesterday in beating Mississippi State. It wasn't some slog fest. They hit a bunch of shots late. They won 80-76. So, and Virginia Tech, they don't play usually, from my knowledge, they don't usually play up in that range in the 80s. You know, they want to keep it a little bit lower. And they won the game 66-52. So I just wonder, you know, of all the 12 seeds, Liberty was not the one that I expected to get on a run. In fact, I think in all my brackets, I had them losing. I had Murray State winning in every bracket with the Oregon-Wisconsin thing. I think I hedged a little bit on that one. And then what's the other 12 seed? New Mexico State. So they were close. They were close to getting that as well. Anyway, I don't know. I don't think UCF is going to be – I don't think they're going to really push Duke that much. They have a really interesting player in Taco Fall. For those of you that haven't seen him, he's the tallest player – he's the tallest basketball player in the world, I would imagine. He's 7'7"?
He's 7'7", I think, yeah.
He's got over an 8-foot wingspan. Surprisingly athletic for somebody his size. So he's an interesting guy to watch. I think everybody will get to know him now because he's playing Duke. But I was bummed that they beat VCU. I have friends that work in the athletic department at VCU, and I wanted to see them win. But anyway, so yeah, Duke, UCF, Liberty, Virginia Tech. I think it's just lining up for Duke to be in the Elite Eight.
So exact numbers here. Taco Fall is 7'6". That makes him one of the 40 tallest people in the world per ESPN. Fall has bulked up his frame to 310 pounds.
Wow. Is he really that heavy? Damn.
That's amazing. He looks so thin being that tall.
I know. But,
Fall is 23. Manute Bol was 7'7". So Manute Bol still the tallest to have played in the NBA. And obviously Bol Bol is 7'3 and was playing for Oregon before getting hurt. You assume Bol Bol goes to the NBA next year. These guys can, well, I guess Fall is 23, so he's probably done growing. But Bol Bol, I think, is 19 or 20 and could have another small growth spurt in him as he heads towards the NBA. But 300 pounds is insane on that tall a player, because the knees and the ankles bearing that weight all the time seem to lead to bad things. Rounding out the East, don't want to belabor too much on each region, but great discussion as we go through. Maryland over Belmont, close game. This is a Maryland team that I've had a tough time getting an identity from, exactly who they want to be in this tournament in the year. Seemed to be one in the Big Ten that would go on some of these runs that would make a ton of sense. You saw the talent rise and you saw the defense really locked down. And then all of a sudden, it just seemed as if though the team was disinterested and they didn't show up for certain games. LSU beat Yale 79-74. They got tested in their matchup. Here in the East, so it's LSU and Maryland. Feels like a game LSU should win, but both teams played tight games round one. Do you have any take here on Terrapins versus LSU?
Yeah, I expected both of them to lose in the first round. I had Belmont and I had Yale. If Yale hit any kind of shot, they would have won that game. They missed everything. They were so bad from three that it kept the door open for LSU, and LSU had the lead, frankly, most of the game because Yale was continuously missing shots. And on the other side, really both Belmont and Maryland couldn't hit their threes. But I thought Belmont had them, but they got outplayed in the second half. They had a 6-point lead at halftime. They got outplayed in the second half. They missed. In fact, Maryland, I think they hit a free throw to go up 79-77, and then Belmont gets a rebound, or the inbound, I'm trying to remember. But they had the ball with a ton of time. They were holding it for last shot. They didn't have any timeouts, but they had a ton of time to set up, and they kept waiting and waiting and waiting and waiting to run their offense. And Maryland ended up playing good D, but they chucked up just a really bad shot at the end. Trying to win it. I think they tried to win it with a three from what I remember. You know, all these games kind of blend together. But
yep,
I just thought Belmont blew that opportunity. And on the Yale side of things, I they missed a million shots. They really did. It was there for them to take. And I just thought LSU with the suspended Will Wade, I just didn't think they were going to be able to pull it off. And they did. So, yeah, what did they shoot? 21% from three. 8 of 37.
Wow.
And LSU was bad too, but they were 4 of 17. 8 of 37 from 3. They shot 27 for 72 on the game.
Oh, my Lord.
So they, you know.
Took 11 more shots than LSU.
So I can't. I'm going to hedge against LSU the whole tournament. And I think it probably ends for them today. I think it's got to be a really difficult dynamic for the players with the, you know, the coach brought it upon them, but so be it. I actually like Maryland in this game today.
All right. I'll check the line momentarily. Want to round out the East here, and probably we'll discuss this not at length. It's been discussed more than we need to get into here, but you have Michigan State and Minnesota, and you've had one of the bigger storylines of the tournament outside of gameplay. Tom Izzo getting into the face of one of his players, throwing a bit of a temper tantrum himself on the sideline. You can see where I'm leaning in this discussion. But you get a Big Ten matchup here, too, which I don't know that a ton of people are fans of this early on. But Minnesota is one of those strange teams that you didn't really know if they were going to make the tournament. They faltered down the stretch, seemed like a team that may fall out of the tournament as the little Patino. What's
Richard.
It? Richard Pitino, right?
Yeah.
Lost games that they should not down the stretch. Cough. They lost to Rutgers. 68-64. But they did right the ship. They were able to pick up wins against Northwestern and Purdue and Penn State and Purdue again. Then they lost to Michigan. But any thoughts here? Let's talk game first, and then if we have time, we can touch on the narrative that is Tom Izzo. Michigan State wins this going away, right? Like, this seems like a game that Michigan State probably wins by 15 or 20.
Yeah, I was actually surprised that Minnesota beat Louisville. I expected Louisville to take that one. So you could see this, like, this East bracket for me, it's a good thing that I'm leaning on Duke and Michigan State because I got all the upsets wrong. I didn't pick the 12-5 there, and I picked Belmont, and I picked Yale. And so I'm 0-3 just with those, and I certainly thought Louisville was going to win. So there's another one I got wrong. So those brackets are blown up. But, yeah, I think this is a collision course for Michigan State and Duke. It looks more like that now than it did even a couple of days ago. I just think there's not going to be anybody in either of their ways to take them out. So, yeah, I like Michigan State. We should, yeah, we'll get the lines on all of these. So I'm looking at that one right now, actually. Give me a second. Michigan State. Now, that'll be tomorrow, or is that today?
Michigan State game, I believe, is today. Should be today because they play, yeah, tonight.
There it is.
7:45.
There's 10. So they're laying 10. That's a lot.
That is a lot.
That's a
conference
lot.
Game, second time they play this year. You can buy into that narrative a little bit. I think I'd take Michigan State. I just think Minnesota's
I would probably lay off this game.
Sure.
But I do like Michigan State. I would lay the points there. I don't think Minnesota's going to keep it particularly close. And to talk about the story line, I think he'll probably think twice about, like, really wagging his finger at somebody like that. But it isn't a big deal. I thought the best point that was made was on, I think it was by, I want to say it was Seth Davis, because he was talking with Candace Parker and Brendan Haywood on that show. You know, there's multiple studio shows going on. I think that was the one. He was saying that while the optics are bad, he does have the kind of relationship with players that they can give it back to him. You saw the player wasn't just sitting there. And by the way, he was yelling at multiple guys there. And, you know, he poked his finger in the one's chest. But the guy was talking back to him. So I think it's indicative of the relationship he has with these guys. I read something. Now, obviously, there's some hit pieces that have been done about Izzo, but there's a lot of guys out there. He's pretty good to the media. So there's guys that stepped up in his defense and said, Coach Izzo actually doesn't do USA basketball because he doesn't want to be away from campus. He likes being around his players all the time. So I think he has a close relationship with a lot of guys. We've never heard that he's some tyrannical douche like Bobby Knight was. And if you want to, you know, go look into the 30 for 30 that ESPN did on Bob Knight, it's pretty crazy to go review all of that kind of stuff. But reality is, I don't think it's that big of a deal. I think the optics aren't great, but I'm not one of the people that think he should be suspended or you can't play players like that. Like, you know, any of that stuff.
I have no desire for Tom Izzo to be suspended or to be fired or quit like that. That I think is taking it too far. The problem I have is the people who automatically say, oh, well, you know, that's good coaching. That's how you get through to these players. That's where I balk because no, it's not. And I mean, there's science on it that yelling and demeaning someone is not a way to get them to perform better. With that said, I get that there are some people, some players, some coaches who operate better that way. And so on an individual basis, if a player as a coach, you know, this player responds better to being sternly talked to. Great. I do think there's a little bit of, stop throwing a temper tantrum. Like you're a great coach. Like, it just seems like he comes off as screaming and yelling. He looks like a toddler to me. Now, he's a great coach and he's been doing it for years and he wins. So that's great. And he gets results. So you sort of forgive some of that stuff. But, and the people out there who are like, oh, you can't compare it to an office setting. Sure. But he's still a boss. And you wouldn't find that boss doing that anywhere else and have it be acceptable, except in sports. And I think that's at least an interesting discussion to have as to why we say this is okay in sports, it's not okay anywhere else. I think that's a discussion worth having. We'll have more of it on the other side of this break. We'll also talk about the next region, talk about some of these lines as well. We have plenty to get to here on Fantasy Sports Today. Dan Stratford, Mike Blewett, find us at FNTSY Radio on Twitter. Back with more on the other side of this break on Fantasy Sports Radio Network.
From the NFL to the NBA, DailyRoto.com is the place to win millions in daily fantasy. You can get the best DFS NFL coverage all season long for a price of $129.99 or dominate the entire daily fantasy sports realm with the Elite Package at $59.99 per month. If you use the promo code FNTSY, you get 10% off your Daily Roto package. Go to DailyRoto.com, pick your NFL or Elite Package, enter promo code FNTSY, and you'll be on your way to becoming the next Daily Roto millionaire.
Wonder, Mike, are Tom Izzo and his players actually friends, or is it just some sort of way that Izzo portrays their relationship? Back here on Fantasy Sports Day, Dan Stratford, Mike Blewett, talking a little Tom Izzo. Wanted to give you a chance to react there, Mike. I know I took it up to the top of the break. Any thoughts? We can also move on. I know you said your piece as well. Don't want to belabor this discussion.
Yeah.
But about Izzo as... It's also the interesting fact, you've dealt with college sports for a while in your job. Yeah. He talked as though the players were employees, right? And he talked as though these players are, you know, his employees. And he wasn't going that route. He wasn't talking about paying players or anything like that. But it is an interesting use case in future discussions around, should the players be paid? Are they, in fact, employees? Tom Izzo in front of the media after that game.
Yeah. I don't know that that's a road any coach wants to go down if he starts playing a work dynamic. I think it's certainly more dictatorial there than anything else. You have to do what the coach says. Like you're not really going to disobey the coach, especially somebody of his ilk.
Right, not a democracy.
Basis. Right. I have no tolerance for bullies, really. You know, whether it's in the workplace or on the basketball court, or, you know, we've seen certainly bully football coaches, guys like Jim McElwain and Brian Kelly, just losing their minds on the sidelines, and they get criticized rightly for it. I think a lot of old school players just say, hey, man, that's the way it goes. But you are seeing there's clearly different dynamics that exist now with players being from different generations altogether. You know, Tom Izzo could be these guys' grandfather, frankly. So... I think what's really interesting is, and I just heard this recently, an anecdote recently about Tom Brady, how, as if the guy isn't like perfect enough, like he has worked to find out how to better communicate with millennials in order to better communicate with his teammates. Because when you think about it, I mean, it's really unique. Brady's going to be 42.
Yep.
And he's playing with 23-year-old players. Like, how would he communicate with Sony Michel? He's a different guy. Forget the fact that they have different backgrounds or from different parts of the country. He's 20 years older than him almost. So he's worked at trying to learn how to better communicate with millennials. I should probably do that too. My kids are from, you know, I'm 40 years older
They're
than my
Gen
kids.
They're Gen Z, right?
So, So I think that's why it's also stark as well, because there's less and less tolerance for bullying. You see somewhat a bullying behavior, and I think it becomes problematic. I for whatever reason, and I'd be the first one to be like, Brian Kelly's a jerk for doing that, but I didn't think it was that crazy. But his background is a part of that. He doesn't regularly do that stuff. I saw Bob Knight do this stuff all the time.
Yeah.
Publicly. Forget the fact that he choked guys and bullied guys in inconceivable ways behind closed doors. We saw Bobby Knight just lose his mind on officials, on players regularly.
Right.
I haven't seen Tom Izzo do that with regularity.
Right, and
he
don't
freaked out because they weren't giving effort. Should he be poking his finger in people's chests? No. But I think that can be an apology between him and the player behind closed doors. And I don't really have a problem if Tom Izzo tells people to pound sand. It's my player, we have a good relationship. This isn't a problem. You know what I mean?
I think
he has to be
king.
Smart about the way he does it, though, because this is a sort of hot button issue for some people.
I think context is king. I think he nailed it there, that we've never once heard about anything in practice or anything behind closed doors with Izzo, and we don't see it often during games. My personal experience, but my fandom is Rutgers. We've talked about that. There was the Mike Rice situation where you saw Rice on the sidelines, and he was a bombastic, you know, yeller, screamer towards the refs, towards anyone that would listen, and then you saw it in practice. And, yeah, the edited video was of hours upon hours upon hours of practice whittled down to about 3 minutes, but still that 3 minutes was really telling of how he treated his players and how he actually was. And that's where you have to say, whoa, this guy is not only trying to mentor these players, he's trying to break them down. Like, he's trying to break them to listen to him. And that's a big difference between trying to build somebody up. Let's move forward.
By the way, that's a pretty interesting tale to the discussion, because I went to BC when Tom Coughlin was the football coach.
Yes.
And obviously I was friendly with some guys that were on the team, guys that went on to the NFL. In fact, those Tom Coughlin teams produced a ton of NFL players. He just recruited well, developed them well, and there was a lot of guys from that team. Glenn Foley was a quarterback, and Pete Kendall was a guard in the NFL for more than a dozen years, and Mike Mamula was a first-round draft pick.
Right.
Pete Mitchell was a tight end in the league for a bunch of years, like on and on. I could list probably a dozen guys that made the league, but they weren't like, how tough do you think Tom Coughlin was 28 years ago? Like, the guy was brutal. They were up doing 5:30 runs. I remember this 5:30 in the morning runs during the off season in February in Boston.
Yep.
You know how cold it is up there?
I am
in the morning in February. You live there. It's insane that they were doing that around the reservoir of BC, freezing. The wind.
Like, yeah,
that was part of the deal. Mandatory. I don't know that you can do that now. The NCAA rules are actually different, so you can't have these guys doing certain
limited workouts.
But I mean, it's just a different time, and I try to be progressive in the way I'm approaching it. So it's odd that I'm somewhat on the defending Izzo side, but I don't really think it's that big of a deal. I do think to your point, context is king. So anyway,
we'll swap some more stories about coaches later on off air, because
I don't think anybody liked him, by the way. Coughlin, they just knew,
I'm sure,
that he knew what he was doing.
Right. And there's again, there are, you know, office dynamics, and I know people don't like comparing office work to sports because of the elite athlete side, but office dynamics do matter in the hierarchical way people are treated. And there are some bosses who get by just being, you know, great at what they do, but a terrible human being. So that works, because they get results.
I've had
results.
Tons of bully bosses.
Yes, exactly.
They suck.
Right.
I don't like any of those guys. I'll never say a nice word about them.
Where do we want to go next? West, or do we want to go south? Let's go south.
Yeah, sure.
Let's go south.
Talk about Iowa beating Cincinnati. That was a shocker to me. I expected Cincinnati to win that. So as you can tell, I'm talking about all the games I got wrong. I'm doing really well in my brackets so far. I have a personal connection to the UVA team. So I was, thank God they came back. But I was saying to Dan during the break, I was watching the UVA game. I was out yesterday with a friend just watching all the games at a pub in Manhattan, and there were a group of UVA fans there, and the look on their face in the first half was just,
can't imagine.
They were like, they couldn't even talk. They weren't even really talking to one another. They were down 13 in the first half. They couldn't hit a shot, and then finally it started to thaw a little bit at the end of the first, and then obviously they took off in the second half. A friend I went to high school with is the stepdad of Ty Jerome. It's just a weird personal connection. So I felt really horrible for them last year, and I hope they go as far as they can this year. I still don't think their style lends them to winning a tournament like this. I think they'll keep ripping off 27 win seasons, because I think Bennett is a really good coach and it obviously works in the regular season. It's just when you get into tournament play and you have to win six games, do they have enough offensive firepower to get there? I don't know.
I don't know that they have that one guy to carry them when they play poorly. Right. Like, and that's not the style of team he's built. They have good to great players who on their own could do some big things, but I don't know there's the one guy to lean on to really make that difference in a game against a better team. Now, in this one, they pulled it together, clearly got it done in the second half. They'll face Oklahoma here in round two. That's tomorrow night, that game. Oregon over Wisconsin. Listen, Wisconsin's always been that team, and this goes back to, you know, 10, 15 years ago, where they get in the tournament and fall flat on their face. Again, a team that style of play doesn't necessarily lend itself to tournament play. I expected Wisconsin to win here.
But then they've had these good runs. Like, the funny part about that is the Sam Decker team and then the one
that's true.
19 years ago, like I remember the 2000 Final Four, they made it. It is funny because the public money was on Oregon, and it got to the point there's so much public money on Oregon and drove the spread down that I actually took Wisconsin yesterday. So I got that wrong. They just didn't play a good game. And that game was always a coin flip for me, because if you look at my brackets, I have Oregon winning a couple games. But when it came down, I just thought I had value Wisconsin at minus 1.5. It came so far down. I was like, all right, I'm going to hedge against my brackets the other way. And what the one thing you asked me about the brackets, like the one takeaway I've really had is that it's all a crapshoot when it gets to the tournament, because you've had hot teams. You've had white hot teams lose and a couple of them advance. You know, that you could make the case for Oregon's like they're really not that good. They just got on this run in the Pac-12 tournament, and that's not even a good conference this year. So people are taking Oregon. They don't know anything about them except what they saw last weekend, and Wisconsin's just a better team. Yet Oregon continues to stay hot. Wofford is one. Wofford hasn't lost a game yet this year, this calendar year. Their four losses were all in non-conference play back in December, November, and all to ranked teams. Like, Wofford's good, and they blitzed Seton Hall. That game wasn't close. I watched them play. They were a better team than the whole way. And then I was thinking one other team. Belmont was a team that ripped off a lot of wins this year, and they just didn't get it done against Maryland. They didn't hit from outside. Buffalo, another hot team. They kicked Arizona State's tail in the second half yesterday. So I'm saying all this is to say there's some hot teams that just bad matchup or a bad game, finally. And these other hot teams keep it rolling. Wofford, Oregon, Buffalo.
No team hotter, though, than UC Irvine, who beat Kansas State 70-64. I think it's their 17th straight win here in the tournament. Now it's a 12-13 matchup. They get Oregon, and listen, Oregon has talented players, and that's my first listen of the show. I'm going to try to keep those down today. But the Bulbul injury and what's happening with Oregon, do you see this as a toss-up matchup? I haven't seen a line as of yet for tomorrow's game, but do you see this as a toss-up, or do you think UC Irvine's run ends here and Oregon makes their way into the Sweet 16?
I would pick Oregon here. I just think the overall athleticism could carry them through. Keep in mind that UC Irvine was playing a Kansas State team without one of their starters. Dean Wade was out again, missed the tournament for the second year in a row. So it was a hampered Kansas State team. I watched a lot of that game, and Irvine outplayed them. So kudos to Irvine. And I'll give them a shot against Oregon because of what I just said about Oregon. If you're making me pick, I'm going to pick Oregon straight up. We'll see if I can get a line on that one. I am only seeing today's games right now. So I'll try to find tomorrow's games, maybe during the break, so we can keep going through it.
Yep, we have a couple more games here in the South. Villanova gets by St. Mary's, 61-57. Purdue over Old Dominion. Talked about Iowa a bit already. Want to talk Tennessee specifically. So Villanova-Purdue is today. Is it tonight game? Breaking down the way the bracket has gone. Listen, and there's the second one. There's Jay Wright in this game. I talked about him with Keith Yerzari for his Hofstra roots, Jerry Wright's a great coach, and Villanova has talented players. It wouldn't surprise me if Nova was the sort of team that came in and reeled off a run to the Elite Eight or even Final Four here. I know it's a tough bracket with Virginia and Tennessee, but that wouldn't shock me. And Purdue, again, Big Ten teams in this tournament, I always sort of fade away from simply because the way that league plays, they don't necessarily play as well here in the tournament, simply from a star power perspective. Any take here on Nova versus Purdue?
The Villanova-St. Mary's game was a really hard game for me. Every time I got to the bracket, I was trying to think. And I ended up picking Villanova because of Jay Wright over Randy Bennett, which Randy Bennett's a good coach. Jay Wright's a great coach. I'm not denigrating Randy Bennett in any way. I feel like their experience from last year, there are some holdover players, their experience from last year with Jay Wright would just get them through. I loved the under in that game, and then it came under, so I won a little bit there. That under was like 129, and they didn't get particularly close. So I don't think Nova's going to get on a big run here, but it won't shock me if they beat Purdue. I need to see what that spread is. Let me see. It's right here. 3.5. Nova getting 3.5. Ugh, I wouldn't want to lay the points. I'll tell you that.
Yeah, that complicates things.
But I don't have Villanova doing well in my brackets, particularly well. Maybe I have them winning a couple of games in one of the brackets, but overall, I've been giving Purdue the chance to go on a run. I still think Tennessee is a little fugazi, but I do think that their bracket lines up for them to go far. If Tennessee goes to the Elite Eight, it won't surprise me. But they almost lost to Colgate last night, and they may have lost because the kid on Colgate had pink eye.
Yep, and that's the story I wanted to hit on. That game was a fun one. I watched that from about halfway through the first half. Tennessee absolutely blowing out Colgate to end the half, and then the second half starts, and Colgate's defense was amazing. Like they owned the paint. They're big guys. They were trapping and doubling on the low block right away, and they were just moving. They were playing a 2-1-2 zone, which looked like a mess at first when they first got into it in the second half, but you saw it flowing. You saw it working, and their star player, a transfer from Northwestern, had bad contacts, they kept saying. His contacts wouldn't stay in his eyes, and you saw him on the bench, and he was honestly ripping at his eyes with that towel, and he was full on, like, just, and he had to keep asking one of the coaches what the score was. He couldn't see at all, and here his team making this run against the number 2 seed. Tennessee gets behind, a big, what was it, I think 4 points, and was able to come back. We'll talk more on the other side of the break. I want to break down this game a little bit and see what Tennessee really has in store for the rest of this tournament. We'll touch on the rest of the regions. We'll talk some Major League Baseball and some NFL and some NBA on the rest of the show. Back with more on the other side of this. Dan Straffer, Mike Blewett, Fantasy Sports Today.